Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of QSR Uncut. I'm your host, Danny Klein, the editorial director here at QSR. And so a very special episode, and I will also say that before this, I did a really good job to try to figure out how to pronounce Diana's last name here, so I am going to get it correct, even though I do this wrong all the time on the podcast. But Diana, guess a king.
Yes. Close? Guess perfect. A king. Perfect.
General counsel at Restaurant Technologies. So we have a lot to cover, you know, really interesting points, you know, we're going to get into. I think some topics that the industry really needs to hear. I'll just leave that as a little bit of a tease here in the air for a second. But before we get started, Diana, just tell us a little bit about your role, about the company as well, you know, maybe just kind of how you got started, and we'll jump into it from there.
Sure. So Restaurant Technologies started almost 30 years ago now, and it is within the food service industry. We supply fresh cooking oil to a number of restaurants, QSRs, mom and pop shops, universities, hospitals, you name it. And we also, not only do we supply the fresh cooking oil through our total oil management system, but we also remove the used cooking oil. And then that used cooking oil gets converted into biodiesel and renewable diesel. A few years ago, about 10 years ago, we also purchased and acquired another system, Automist system, and that is an automated hood cleaning system, which is great because it prevents that buildup of grease and grit and grime that is also responsible for a lot of kitchen fires. So it helps keep the hood and flue systems clean and also helps to reduce that risk of kitchen fires. So those are the two main functions of the business. Like I said, we've been around for almost 30 years, have 41 depots across the US. I was lucky enough to join the company about 5 years ago. I was their first lawyer. I am still the general counsel, and my role has evolved over those 5 years. One of the things that I know we're going to touch on today is my role's expanded to include leading our ESG efforts. So environmental, social governance, especially on the side of sustainability, which is such an important aspect of a lot of our customers' businesses and how we can partner with them to help achieve their goals.
You know, I think you are the first lawyer we have ever had on the podcast. So
I will try to do us all justice and represent us well. I promise you, we are not all very boring and serious and black and white. So I may try to crack a joke. Who knows?
Yeah, you know, two of my favorite people in the industry are actually lawyers. They're employment lawyers. And we were actually exchanging emails this morning about why you should eat collagen. And so not all lawyers are lawyery, right?
This is true. And employment lawyers do often have some of the best stories. We always say that us and HR, we know where all the bones are buried. And so we have some good stories and should maybe write a book if we weren't governed by confidentiality and attorney-client privilege.
So. Yeah, wait till you retire, I guess. Although even then, you probably couldn't do it.
Until you die, basically.
Yeah, right. Just leave it to somebody. Let's talk a little bit about the just kind of the total oil management and a little bit of the background on sort of what's going on here. And then we get into the ESG, which I think is, you know, as I kind of teased there at the beginning, stuff that we really need to talk about more in this industry. But, you know, in the QSR space in particular, oil, you know, I know it doesn't sound like the most exciting topic on earth, but whenever we do cover it, it always gets read by a lot of people just because I think it's just an essential heartbeats, you know, kind of part of what's going on. And there are, like anything in this industry, right and wrong ways to go about it. So, I mean, what are some of the solutions that, you know, you're offering or that are popular with, you know, operators? Because as we all know, I think one of the things that they're often trying to do is have things automated for them or made easy so they could focus on things like making food.
Yeah. And making good food and making sure it tastes good too, which is also one of the benefits of our system. So it's funny, I was actually in Florida recently with my family for spring break, and I watched, it was in the parking lot and of a restaurant, and I watched these two guys collectively hauling a huge vat of oil. And I saw them and I said, I know exactly what you're doing, and I know you don't have our system. Because when you have our system, our total oil management system, you don't ever have to do that. And what's amazing about it is it takes one of those, you know, the really dirty and dangerous job, which is hauling hot oil and spilling it, right? And then oil is slippery and then you slip and fall and then you call the lawyers, right? And so, but hauling that oil, changing out that oil, dumping it out, throwing away the oil into, you know, a pit in the back or a trash can, which is where these guys were throwing it. I don't know if that was allowed, but that's where they did it. We get rid of that, right? All of that effort, that dirty job that nobody really wants to do, we fix that. Ours is a total closed loop system. We have our two tanks and we bring in the fresh oil. It's automated. So we have a remote monitoring system that tells us when the fresh oil is getting low. So we automatically come out and refill it. So then again, taking away that task from the backhouse employees of having to order, you know, place those jib orders or place that shipment order. That's done. That's automated. And then all they have to do is press a button. It fills up into the fryer. And then we also have a fryer filtration monitoring system. And so instead of just working off a schedule, which isn't always accurate as to when that oil is getting dirty, right? And when it gets dirty, it means the food isn't as fresh. It doesn't taste as good. And if you have a business and they're working and they're getting slammed with business, which is great, but maybe they are using their oil and it's getting dirtier faster than they realize it. And if they don't change it when they should, it can impact the taste of the food and the quality of food for their customers. And so our monitoring system allows them to look at when the oil is actually needing to be changed. And it helps them save then on, you know, extending the life of the oil or changing it when they need to, if sooner, in order to make sure that food is fresh and tasty. So it's a whole package that really helps automate and bring a safer, smarter solution to the back of the house for those restaurants.
Yeah, I had read something on the same point of what you're saying. You know, maybe not. I think most people would kind of go straight to, you know, getting too dirty and the food tasting bad and all these things. But, you know, there's definitely an element too of changing the oil when it's, you know, clean or not needing to do so. And I think what I had read was that, you know, you had this operator and he was talking about, you know, he was saving him $500 a month per restaurant. He's a 5-unit situation, so it's $2,500 a month, $30,000 a year.
That monitoring allows them to do, to see when they actually need to change it, other than just changing it on some set schedule, which is generally made up and might not be actually true to their business needs.
Right. Yeah, and it's interesting because so much of the technology that I hear about now, stuff like this is actually, to me, what's really happening at the moment. You know, there are a lot of really cool things that we talk about a lot, you know, whether or not it's sort of like a, you know, a robot making a salad or whatever it might be. But the truth is that so many operators are trying to change the back of the house to make it not only a safer and more profitable place, but also just a better place to work, you know, because so many employees now, you know, with what you're paying them, you know, it's kind of hard to have jobs that are really bad or unenjoyable or full of tasks that are super monotonous. You know, if you're paying somebody $20 in California and so on and so forth, you might actually want them looking at a guest once in a while.
Doing something like that. Yeah.
Right. So things like this are actually the kind of the bones of what's truly happening in the industry. Just kind of a side rant there. But it's a cool thought, you know, that there is a lot of ground to be made up here. And I think that's a good way to segue into the ESG that we're talking about. So I have a lot of stats in front of me. So I guess we could kind of probably start wherever you want, but I do think just kind of, you know, in the terms of from year to year, you know, really big changes. I mean, what are some of the things driving, you know, what's going on here and just how present is it in the business for you all and, you know, what you're trying to help operators achieve?
Sure. So we've always had a really good sustainability story. We just really weren't telling it. And it's almost inadvertent. It's so essential to who we are and what we do. And the fact that by installing our systems, you're eliminating all of those plastic jibs and that cardboard associated with all the packaging. And not only are you not using that anymore, so that's not going into landfills and it's not being converted into waste, it's also, whenever you would do that you can picture it, right? There you are, you're pouring in a jug. I mean, you do it with laundry detergent, you do it with dishwashing liquid, whatever it may be. You never get all of it. There is always some remnant. There is always some excess that is still stuck in that plastic bottle. And so you're also then throwing that away. So the combination of all of that, that's gone. All of that waste, all of that, you know, the trash and everything that's associated with that. And then you have the used cooking oil, which we just talked about, right? The two guys hauling and throwing away in the trash can or wherever it may be. We're taking that, and 100% of all that we collect gets recycled into biodiesel or renewable diesel. So an example, all of it that we collect that goes to California, all of it is 100% the renewable diesel, which is awesome. And it's a lot of our customers actually have the Quick Trips and the Sheets and those are the Wawas of the world. It's funny because then what they will then use at their pumps, because they're gas stations and they serve food. So they'll use our oil to fry up the food. We'll collect the used cooking oil, and then it'll get converted into biodiesel. And then that's what their customers will then put into their cars. So it's this really cool connected circular fuel economy that's being created from just using our systems and implementing that within our customers.
That's pretty wild to consider, that the oil in your restaurant might actually fuel your car if you're the operator themselves.
Yes, yes. It's funny. You're eating your French fries or your chicken nuggets, and all of a sudden you're also driving then using the remnants of the oil that came from the food that you were just snacking on. It's a really interesting story when you think about it.
Yeah, I think the number I read was that you recycled 314 million pounds of waste oil, which is 40 million gallons of diesel gas. So these are very, very crazy numbers to even consider.
It is. I mean, we have 41 depots across the U.S., over 40,000 customers, and it adds up. And we want to grow. And when we grow, I can get very scientific into it because I've been doing it now for a few years. You can talk about scope 1, scope 2, scope 3 emissions. See, the lawyer is going to get technical and bore everybody. But what really is cool is it's a benefit to our customers. So the fact that we take the used cooking oil and it gets converted to biodiesel and renewable diesel, it doesn't really actually impact our carbon emission numbers or our greenhouse gas emissions. It impacts our customers. So it's providing a benefit to them by utilizing our system and putting our system in. They are then able to achieve their sustainability goals, their emission reduction goals, because of that being converted into the renewable diesel and the biodiesel. Same thing with them saving on the packaging side of it too.
Yeah. So I always love these kind of comparisons. These always happen like around the Super Bowl, and you'll say, you know, we eat enough wings to go around the world 3 times. Right? And I always think, like, where did they come up with these? But in this case, we've got a few, so I just kind of enjoy them. One being 64 Olympic pools. So I am curious whose job it was to kind of sit and figure out how many, where can we fit this amount of oil into things in the real world? But
no, I know, it is funny. And it's actually, honestly, the EPA is really good about providing all of this stuff. I think because they want to make it relatable, right? They want people to say, okay, I can actually imagine, you know, 3 million tanks of gas, or the equivalent of, you know, over 100,000 cars not driven, which is really great because we drive a lot of cars here in the U.S.
Right. So 855,417 bathtubs, which is fun. 3,055.61 tanks of gas.
3 million. 3 million.
3 million. That's right. Yes. Yeah. So what is this coffee number then? So this is
that's almost a billion.
Yeah. I mean, that's right under a billion. Right. So it's 912 million. Is that right?
Yeah. Coffee cups that are not used. I mean, a lot of coffee cups are also now recyclable and made out of plants and trees and reusable plastic. So I think these are the old kind of coffee cups, maybe the styrofoam cup that you might still see in a law firm office.
I know what you're referencing. Yes. Yeah. I'm a fan of all sorts of coffee cups, but I do hate paper straws, as we've discussed on this podcast with other people in the past.
They're hard. They are not fun. I think Starbucks maybe has made an equivalent that is kind of papery, but not, but also maybe made of plants. It might be better for the environment, maybe.
Yeah, well, they've done a good job admitting that paper straws are terrible by coming out with that lid, you know, that doesn't have a straw, but you can drink out of it. You know, that kind of like curved lid thing that now everyone has one of those. That's a direct sign that a paper straw is not a good product in general. Doesn't mean someone's not going to make a better one, but the your standard coffee house paper straw is a painful experience.
Yeah.
in my opinion.
And that's true that for a lot of our customers too, right? You have the QSRs in the world that are always looking at how can we lessen our impact? What can we do, right? With the paper straws or the plastic cups or the wrapping around the burgers or what the container that the chicken nuggets go in or the, you know, the types of napkins that people use or soft drinks. And so we're just playing a part in the, their goals and their programs where they want to reduce their impact on the environment as well.
Yeah. You know, I want to talk a little bit about that actually, because I would say that there are probably, you know, you were talking about scope one, scope two, scope three, and those usually dominate the sustainability reports that a lot of large chains release. And then you go to read them. And I think we're all kind of asking ourselves, what are they actually talking about? but the upside of that is, I would say 5-6 years ago, you know, nobody was really releasing those. I don't know that anybody was even asking for them. And now you've got sustainability officers at larger brands and people who are really tasked with this kind of side of the company, and not just because it's the right thing to do too, but also financially, there's a lot to be, you know, said for food waste and for the things that we were talking about earlier. So I'm just curious, from, you know, your all side and talking to, you know, franchises and groups and brands and C-stores and restaurants and everything in between, you know, how much of this has become something that's really top of mind for them and something that they are looking for partners in to help them with?
Honestly, I have noticed a shift in the industry that having an ESG story or being able to contribute to your customers' sustainability efforts isn't really something that differentiates us anymore. It's actually now just table stakes.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a solution, or if you can't be a partner that can help them achieve their goals, then what are you doing there? Honestly, it has been something that is so ingrained in what a lot of the, especially the larger QSRs, C-stores, college campuses, huge there, hospitals, things like that, airports, places who have those, you know, those messages, and they are putting that out there to their customers. And they are saying, this is who we are. These are our values, the things that we care about and are concerned about. And if you're a supplier to them and you are not part of that journey and you can't help them on that path, then they don't even look at you anymore.
Right. Yeah. And that's a great point. I would say that it's become table stakes for both sides of the table now, right? Because I don't know that they're really looking to work with vendors who can't help them, or because it's, you know, if that's the case, then maybe it doesn't really make them look so good to have, you know, a partner who has no interest in what's happening on that side of things. So it's,
no, it's true. Yeah. It used to be, okay, you know, let's not have child labor over in factories in Malaysia, right? And that was a big thing for a while. And now it is, what are you doing to, you know, help reduce our impact on the world and what's happening in the environment? So,
yeah. You know, I think one feature too that you all do that we didn't touch on there would be the auto mist. I remember one of the very first restaurant people I ever spoke to actually tried to build a restaurant without a hood. what he had done is that he was open there for a little bit, and then he had a giant fan in there, and he was just having it like go out the door. And then of course somebody figured that out and made him put a hood in there.
I thought you were going to say the restaurant burned down. So I'm two ways here.
Well, right. I think someone came to eat there, was like, you know, I think you need to put an actual hood in this restaurant. And then he, you know, suddenly realized he had to pay for one and all that fun stuff. But ended up good in the end. He had multiple locations, but neither here nor there. But yeah, tell us a little bit about that system, because, yeah, again, you're talking about a lot of automation that can help help keep lawyers away too.
Yes, this is true. This also helps keep lawyers away. When you can help avoid fires or decrease the risk of them happening, also then keeps the lawyers away and the fire marshals and the engineers and the insurance adjusters. So AutoMist system, which I briefly talked about earlier, but this is our automated hood and flue cleaning system. and something, again, that we install. It's automated, like we're talking about the great automation in the back of the house for kitchens. But what is great about it is you no longer have to have the hood cleaners come in on a quarterly basis. This is, again, I'm going to use the word and overuse the word, but automated. And so it's set, it cleans the hood and flue every day. It really helps prevent that grease and dirt and grime buildup. And that is often where you will have the origins of those fires, right? Something sparks, it catches, it gets into that grease, and then all of a sudden it shoots all the way up there. And so what's amazing about it is, you know, combine that with our total oil management system, and you're looking at, you know, savings on insurance premiums, because the adjusters love to see this. The insurance carriers will write that because it just reduces that risk. Right. Or not only on the TOM side, the total oil management side, on the risk of, you know, slip and falls and in workplace injury, but then on the reduction of the risk of fire in the hood and flue systems.
Right. So, you know, we spend a lot of time here kind of talking about some of the really cool numbers and what you all have been able to do. But I think the how of it would be really interesting because, you know, obviously if it was easy to recycle that much oil, probably everybody would do it in the restaurant, but there are the logistical side of, you know, how you actually accomplish this. I think is a really interesting point, you know, in terms, obviously you're not carrying the oil to the trash can and throwing it away. So how do you coordinate something like this, you know, to take it from, you know, this is a good idea, it's something we should be doing, you know, we could help the environment, we could help the circular economy of fueling cars and things of all that we've kind of talked about, but how do you actually go about putting in the systems to go ahead and do this or to achieve some of this?
It came about pretty organically with our company too, and the partnerships that we established, I think over 20 years ago. And I've mentioned earlier that we have our two tanks that we put at a restaurant or a C-store, wherever it may be, a supermarket. And one is a fresh oil tank and one is a used cooking oil tank. So when we deliver the fresh oil, we are simultaneously also pulling out the used cooking oil. And we have these trucks. They are really super outfitted, tricked out trucks. If you open the back of our trucks, I get very angry when people call them, you know, a tractor trailer or just a box truck. And I said, no, no, no. The technology in these trucks is pretty awesome. So we're pulling that used cooking oil at the same time. And we, I said 20 years ago, established a really great partnership with Renewable Energy Group, REG, who was then acquired by Chevron. So Chevron Renewable Energy Group. And we said, you know what? We have all this used cooking oil. We don't want to throw it away. We don't want to, you know, put it into a ditch or a landfill. And they were one of the, you know, leaders in taking used cooking oil, which is, it's incredibly valuable because it is a truly reused commodity. Right? It's people and organizations like Chevron REG and P66 and others, they will actually purchase straight feedstock cooking oil, right? Like the oil itself that isn't used to turn it into diesel and renewable diesel because it's a commodity that once has a market. But ours is actually, it's a reused good. It is taking something that is just waste and using it for another purpose. And so, you know, that partnership started over 20 years ago with Chevron Renewable Energy Group, and it has grown all 41 of our depots. Like I said, every single drop, 100% of that used cooking oil goes to a third party that will convert it into a renewable diesel or the biodiesel. And then that goes then right back out into cars, trucks, vehicles across the U.S.
Yeah, this maybe is a touch off topic, although not really, but if you were, this has been making me think about like what I do in my house and I don't, I don't have a lot of used oil because I'm not frying things really just out of sheer lack of skill and hurting myself. But, what would I do if I had a bunch of oil? Like if I decided I was going to cook a turkey, because I will say, the times that I have done such a thing, I have definitely thrown it in the trash.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't pour it down the sink, right? Because, yeah, you mess up everything. So what do you do?
Yes. The amount that you would be throwing out trash is probably the best place for it. Definitely not down your sink. Definitely not down the disposal and getting into it. Can clog, it can congeal. In the very cold climates, there we keep the oil warm, right? Because you don't want it to start to congeal and stuff like that and stuff. So is it the right thing to do? I mean, you could potentially call a used cooking oil hauler. I doubt they would come to your home because you don't have the,
yeah,
the
have
amount.
I've got half a cup of oil.
but that's why, right? That's what a lot of restaurants still to this day do. They throw it in the big, huge trash bins out back, or there is a pit and a disposal container. And then there are other, I don't want to say competitors, because we like to think that we're unique and don't actually have any true competitors. They are, you know, all above the rest in that regard. But there are other kind of waste haulers that will come and then take that away for them.
Yeah, and this is also a personal curiosity question. In this process of turning used oil into diesel, does it matter what kind of oil we're talking about? Are we talking... Does it have to be peanut? Does it have to be something else? Can it be anything? Or
it can be anything. So it can. What's crazy is I actually went to the facility once, saw the entire process of turning it into biodiesel. And did you know that you could actually drink it?
Drink like used oil?
The finished product. When they convert it and turn it into, like, they strip it clear and it comes in and it's really kind of yellow and gunky looking. And then I watched the process and they had a cup of it at the end. I did not drink it, but when they this was with Chevron REG, and they said that originally when they were going out or in the early days and they were selling it to their customers, they would drink it because you can. It's not really advisable. I mean, you might be running to the bathroom shortly thereafter, but you can drink it and you can live. But that's cool that is converted into something that you could drink.
It's like the Starbucks coffee thing they're doing now. The
olive oil or something, right? Yes, we're going to just be putting biodiesel into your coffee drinks. That's the new use of it.
And to clarify for anybody listening out there, I'm assuming that is that product, and you couldn't go to a gas station and, you know, put diesel fuel into a...
No, do not do that. This is a disclaimer from a lawyer. Do not. These are opinions are my own. They are in no way associated with anything. No, it's definitely not advisable. They were showing us the very, very pure outcome of it after it gets processed. And then, of course, you send it over and it gets mixed with
right.
actual diesel and becomes biodiesel, right? Because it's always a percentage, 80-20, you know, 85-15. So no, don't go to a pump and start putting it in your coffee. This is not.
I would try anything once, not the gas station oil, but I would do what you're saying at least one time on a small scale. I have not tried the Starbucks version yet, not for any real reason. It's just when I get there and I see it on the menu, I'm just like, I don't know that I need that product.
No, I agree. I'm like, just give me my chai latte and let's move on. I like it pure, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and then if I do kind of get something different there, it's probably just not going to be olive oil into my drink. You know, like I had that new thing they did recently with the big purple layer of lavender foam or whatever.
Yes.
Cell phone, that I'm willing to do. I don't know if I really just want oil in my drink.
Let's keep it in the fryers. Let's keep it on the French fries and the chicken nuggets and things like that. We do not do any of those type of gimmicky things. There is no lavender cooking oil that we sell. We have our RT Gold, which is our standard oil, and it is the same all the time. But it's good. It's consistent. Okay, it fries up well. It makes sure that the food tastes consistent and tastes good each time. So.
Yeah, which I think is probably what you actually need. Lavender oil, cooking French fries in. It's starting to get kind of weird. But before I let you go, Diana, though, I did want to ask you a question. Kind of, this is a little bit more broader. If we're just sort of talking about restaurant technologies in the future, so much innovation happening around the industry right now. You know, some of it, like I mentioned earlier, is a little bit crazy. Some of it is really exciting. And there's, of course, a lot that sits somewhere in between those two things. But going into this year and next year, I mean, what are some things that you all are really focused on? You know, I know from some of the operators we've had on here, everybody is, you know, kind of handling certain unique challenges of today's environment. But what are just some things for the company that you all are hearing right now and addressing and maybe kind of on the horizon or just working toward? A little bit open-ended of a question, but definitely a lot of possibilities there.
There are. And of course, we always don't know what we don't know, right? And what's going to come around the corner in the future. But a lot of what we're working on is ensuring and finding ways for the customers to have even more visibility and control. That's what our customers want, right? They want to automate, which we do, but they want to have even more visibility into, you know, maybe seeing exactly the levels in the tanks or being able to know exactly when the delivery is coming or to update or to have that automatic communication and maybe not make a phone call to the helpline, but send a text message. Again, it's continuing to make it easier for our customers to, as our tagline is, control the kitchen chaos. There's a lot that goes on in the back house of the kitchen. I'm sure you know that better than anybody. And we are just trying to provide solutions that make it easier for them and to take out those hassles. Same thing with our Automist system. If it's setting on a schedule for the cleaning, if it's updating it on your phone, if there's an app that we can create, it's focusing on things that's just going to make it easier and more accessible to all of our customers.
Yeah, it's a really good tagline, by the way. But I talked to some people one time, this independent restaurant told me that we were talking about kitchen display systems in particular, and he didn't like them because they were too quiet, and he just was sort of used to the kind of chaos and the loudness of a kitchen. But what I can say for sure is one thing he would not miss is burning himself in oil.
Oh yes, a few people. I don't know anybody that really wants to do that to themselves, and so yes, right. That is something that we solve for, and it is an awesome solution that all of our customers are so grateful for.
Right. Yeah. And I've had a lot of friends who've worked in QSRs and in other kitchens. And I could tell you the oil removal is also nothing that anyone has ever talked about being nostalgic about in their lives either. So
no, they drew the short straw for that shift if they had to be the ones to do it at the end of the shift.
Right. Exactly. All right. Well, Diana, thank you so much for joining us. Before I let you go for the last time here, always offer a chance here at the end for anybody who's interested in learning more. You know, where would be a good place for them to do so? 99.9% of the people usually give me the website, which is totally cool. But I ask that question in the offhand chance that maybe there is also somewhere else you would like to direct them to. But if they want to learn more about restaurant technologies and everything that we've talked about today, what is a good place for them to start?
I mean, I'm going to have to say the website as well. Right. We have our fabulous marketing team who also works with and our awesome tagline, control the kitchen chaos. They have put together a really great website that is chock full of all of the information. It's rti-inc.com. And there's so much in there. There's videos, there's FAQs, there's a learning center. You can learn more just about the company and our values, our 5 C's, which are incredibly important to us. Right. And we have, you know, our customer character, commitment, courage, and community. And that is so important. And again, goes to the heart of ESG, the environmental social governance aspect of it. And I mean, I could talk for days because, well, I'm a lawyer and it's what I do, but I could talk for days about ESG and all of our DEI efforts and everything that we're doing as a company, because it really is who we are and it's a part of everything that we do. And those values drive us as well. And part of our mission and what we want to deliver and the quality of service that we provide to our customers. So yeah, the website, like everybody else, the website.
Yeah. I should change our tagline to QSR magazine, understand the kitchen chaos.
See?
Then I might be talking to you afterwards.
I think you may have changed it just enough, but that is also not legal advice. I am not giving you full legal advice right now.
Yeah, we actually don't have a tagline. Right? No, wait. Yeah, we do. It's God, it's been so long. It's limited service something, endless possibilities or something like that. I should probably know that since I've worked here 9 years, but.
Yeah, or perhaps you need a new one and that's why you don't remember it.
That's true. Good point. Maybe. Because if I don't remember it, nobody else does either.
I know, because if you think of the iconic ones, you know what they are. Like ours, Control the Kitchen Chaos. It's
iconic. I need to revisit it. But thank you again so much, Diana, for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's really been a pleasure. I can talk about this anytime, all the time. So,
yeah, and like I said earlier, I think we should talk more about this subject because a lot of people are aware of it, familiar with it, but they just don't talk about it.
It's true. Impacts them on a regular basis. People don't realize that it's in the food they eat. It's in the things that they do in the restaurants, in the gas stations they go to. It's a part of everything that we do each day. And so the more we talk about it, the better.
It's very true. And for everybody out there who's listening, as always, we appreciate it. And we'll see you next time.